With its beautiful landscapes, rich culture, and fascinating history, it's no wonder that Canada is many people's dream holiday destination. But to the true crime enthusiast, it's home to many strange mysteries, from the famous Highway of Tears and beyond. In today's episode, we'll be exploring two creepy cold cases from Canada. Sam Doe. On the morning of April 13th, 1977, an older couple named the McLeods scoured their abandoned farmhouse property west of Tofield, Alberta, in search of any spare parts that would be suitable for their new home. What they never expected to find on that spring morning was a body. Upon opening the lid of their septic tank, they noticed a grey sock floating on the water's surface. Baffled, they looked closer, only to find there was a human leg beneath the water. The couple immediately notified law enforcement. When RCMP officers arrived on the scene, they found human remains 1.8 meters deep in the septic tank. They were taken to a medical examiner, where investigators learned the gruesome details of the crime. The end of Sam Doe's life had been a violent one. He had been tied up, possibly to a bed, and repeatedly beaten and burned using cigarettes and butane torches. He had also been sexually mutilated before he was shot in both the head and chest. Some sources state that the mutilation was done by farm shears, but it's unclear how this conclusion was reached. After his demise, Sam's killer had rolled him up in a yellow bedsheet before wrapping nylon rope around him. Officers who worked the case reported that it was, quote, one of the most vindictive and sadistic crimes they'd ever seen. After being dumped headfirst into the septic tank, Sam's body had been covered with quicklime, presumably to help aid decomposition, so that the remains would become unidentifiable. However, since there was water already in the tank, only a small degree of superficial burning occurred. A large amount of the body tissue dried out instead, leaving it rather well preserved for investigators. It was believed that he had been in the tank for several months. The mutilation of the body initially made it hard for the medical examiner to determine whether or not Sam was male or female. It was eventually concluded that he was a white male between the ages of 28 and 32. Sam had all of his teeth, with some fillings, and a sign of recent dental work. He was of a medium build, with dark hair, and was likely right-handed. The color of his eyes is unknown, and he stood between 5'5" and 5'7". Examinations of his bones and teeth revealed that he'd suffered some sort of undisclosed illness at the age of 5. As for his clothing, Sam was wearing a dark blue Levi work shirt with snap buttons, a grey t-shirt, blue jeans, grey wool socks, and brown imitation wallaby shoes. With little else to go on, investigators sent Sam's dental records to over 800 dentists in the area. They also sent them to Canadian dental magazines and nationwide bulletins. However, Sam still remains unidentified. He was ultimately buried in an unmarked pauper's grave in Edmonton Cemetery. 2 years later, in 1979, his body was exhumed. Dr. Clyde Snow, a forensic pathologist, helped to reconstruct the skull and create an image of what Sam might have looked like while alive. Multiple clay models were made of Sam's face over the next few years. This time around, it was also determined that the original medical examiner had got his ethnicity and age wrong. It was instead determined that Sam was around 35 years of age and was Native American. A sample of his DNA was taken and his image was posted nationwide. But still, authorities were left with no answers. The brutal nature of Sam's murder left residents of Tofield shocked, and they checked their own septic tanks for any remains. Investigators theorized that Sam was perhaps transient, a migrant worker, or otherwise not a long-term resident of Alberta, as he did not match up with any local missing person reports. His clothing suggested that he may have been a construction worker or a farm laborer. Authorities also believed it was likely the culprit or culprits knew the area well, as they chose the location knowing it was abandoned. They likely thought he wouldn't be discovered for a long time. As for the abandoned property itself, there was no evidence Sam was killed there. It's likely the farmhouse was simply a dumping site. Since the crime was so violent, many people believe the attack was personal. Many online sleuths focus on the mutilation part of the violence, proposing that Sam was an unfaithful partner, or someone who'd committed sexual crimes. It's also been theorized that the mutilation was designed to emasculate Sam. Others believe he was the victim of a hate crime, suggesting that he was gay, or killed for being a Native American. However, all of these theories are simply that. There is no evidence to corroborate any of them. One rule out made in Sam's case is that of a man named Edward Joseph Arkand. He went missing from Coleman, Alberta on June 8th of 1975, but has been confirmed to not be this John Doe. In 2017, a new Canadian DNA database was set up. It was hoped that this would finally bring answers in Sam Doe's case, but so far, it has not yielded any. A retired RCMP officer named Ed Lamets, who helped recover Sam's body, believes the young man will never be identified. He also added that around $1 million Canadian dollars has gone into the case. However, it's important to note that with the help of DNA-based non-profit organizations and genealogy websites, there are dozens of does regaining their identity each year. In 2021 alone, we have so far seen around 40 cases of newly identified does. It is not so far-fetched to hope that after 44 years, the same might soon be true for Sam. If you have any information as to the identity of Sam or his killer, you can contact Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477. Rhonda Running Bird. Born on November 22nd of 1969 to Mavis Crowchild, Rhonda Running Bird initially grew up in Cambrose, Alberta, but her mother grew lonely without her family around her, so the pair moved back to the Siksika First Nation, Alberta, where Mavis was originally from. Now closer to her family, Rhonda was taught all about the intricacies of her culture and the tribe's traditions. Following her graduation, Rhonda met her first husband, a man named Lance Cryer. The pair married quickly and had two children, Jeannie and Cyrus. However, the couple's marriage swiftly deteriorated. In her early 20s, Rhonda met her aunt's husband at a family gathering. His name was Fred Legrell, and he was a Cree man from Alberta's Sunchild First Nation. The couple left their respective partners and got together, moving to Red Deer, Alberta in 1994, where they had their first and only child together. However, it wasn't long before the cracks began to show in their relationship. Legrell was, by all accounts, a serial abuser. While he was still married to Rhonda's Aunt Rose, he had been extremely violent and had once even attempted to kill her. Rose recalled a time when she was 7 months pregnant, when Legrell threw her into his truck and sped off, hitting a sharp corner and rolling the vehicle. Luckily, Rose and her baby were fine. It is unclear whether Legrell had intentionally rolled the truck or not. To cope with the trauma and abuse she was enduring, Rhonda turned to alcohol and pills. She was frequently in and out of hospital for injuries she'd received from Legrell and his violent attacks. Her two older children told their grandmother Mavis that they would be made to sleep either under the bed or outside, and they would hide from Legrell in fear. However, Rhonda refused to discuss the situation, even with her own mother. She once took 1 hour to climb 7 steps in Mavis's house and was eventually beaten so badly that she ended up with a kidney colostomy bag. Mavis offered to call the police for Rhonda, but she declined, begging her not to tell anybody about it before returning home to Legrell. On March 26th of 1995, the now 25-year-old Rhonda accompanied Legrell, their 18-month-old baby, and Legrell's sister Liza on a hunting trip to Swan Lake in the Manitoba province. According to Legrell's later statement to the RCMP, their truck had gotten stuck in a bog on the way there, and so Rhonda had left to get help. He claimed that she left a note behind in the truck that said she was going to Cow Lake. It was signed, Love Rhonda, and had 2 hearts drawn around the name. Initial police searches involved dogs, search and rescue teams, and air searches, but no trace of the 25-year-old was found. 4 major searches took place that same year, but each yielded no new results. Notably, Legrell never participated in any of the searches for his missing partner. Authorities were not notified of the 25-year-old's disappearance for 2 days while the family was stuck, bogged down in the mud. But worse still, it was a few weeks before Rhonda's family realized that she was missing, including her mother, who only found out after seeing it on the news. When the family were alerted to the vanishing, they gathered together and organized a search party. Mavis spoke with an RCMP officer and asked what he thought had happened to her daughter. He told her that she was probably out getting drunk in Edmonton. This callous reaction justifiably soured the relationship between Rhonda's family and law enforcement, and is sadly not an unusual account from the treatment of Native American cases by the RCMP in the 90s. While out searching, the family stumbled across several items that they believe belonged to Rhonda. They found a shoe, a pair of glasses, and a colostomy bag. According to authorities, however, the glasses were not Rhonda's. They said that the prescription did not match the one that was on file. However, Mavis argued that the police had contacted her former eye doctor and not her current one, where an older prescription of hers was the one they had. RCMP reportedly never compared the glasses with Rhonda's new prescription, nor did they speak with her current eye doctor. They remained steadfast in their belief that the glasses were not those of the missing 25-year-old. The authorities also went on to deny the shoe that the family found was Rhonda's, despite the fact that they were laced in a unique way, which Mavis herself had taught to her daughter when she was growing up. It's unclear what happened to the colostomy bag, as further details are not discussed in any articles on the case. According to several reports, during a search, scraps of clothing were found in a wooded area, but there are no further details regarding this find. The same thing applies to a report that a firearm was located in the area. Mavis has vehemently disagreed with Legrell's version of events of the day Rhonda vanished. She said she doubted her daughter would go for help, given the state she was in, as she could barely walk. She also questioned why Rhonda wouldn't have simply waited to flag down a passing car, rather than wandering off into the woods. She told news outlets, "No one's going to survive in a forest like that," with a colostomy bag. As for the note that was found in the truck, RCMP officers took a sample of Legrell's handwriting and noted that it looked uncanny to the writing on Rhonda's alleged note. Despite this, and despite saying they would bring Legrell in for a polygraph test, he was never tested, and details about whether he was even brought in for questioning are unknown. Authorities recently noted that the only person of interest in the case has since passed away. Mavis told reporters that Legrell drank himself to death in 2016. Following Rhonda's disappearance in May of 1995, Mavis and her daughter's first ex-husband, Cryer, were given joint custody of Jeannie and Cyrus. Tragically, Cryer was later beaten to death, leaving Mavis with full custody of the children. Legrell gave up custody of his son with Rhonda around the same time, and he was raised by her aunt Rose. Rhonda's brother, Keith Running Bird, said that at the time of her vanishing, Rhonda had been attempting to gather evidence of her husband's abuse, but he only found out about this after she disappeared. local law enforcement have said that there is not enough evidence to suggest that Legrell was involved, despite his history of abuse and Rhonda's hospital records corroborating his violent tendencies. There are very few theories in Rhonda's case, largely because it has not been widely discussed or covered by the media. It is possible she got lost in the forest and succumbed to the elements, and some web sleuths have speculated that perhaps she left her old life behind and started over somewhere new. But the most likely scenario seems to involve Legrell. If you have any information about the vanishing of Rhonda Running Bird, you can contact the RCMP Rocky Mountain House Detachment at 403-845-2881. Or you can contact Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477. And there you have the facts. Please leave a comment down below with your own theories and speculations, and remember to like this video and subscribe to support the channel. You can also support us on Patreon for as little as $2 a month, which works out as less than 20 cents per video. Thank you for watching. Stay alert, stay safe, and I'll see you next time.